This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. After a bittersweet week for Rotherham United, winners of the 2022 Papa John's Trophy final, but whilst they were otherwise occupied, they were not only knocked off the top of Sky Bet League One, where they've been since the start of January, but also into the playoff places. It's the battle to get out of the Sky Bet Championship that's on the mind of our first guest this week, whose team may be on the verge of one of English football's greatest ever stories.
No one thinks we should be here. No one thinks we're going to do it. Like, we can prove everyone wrong here.
We'll also reflect on the great work going on across the country during the EFL's Week of Action.
Football clubs through our Extra Time Hubs programme are providing that sort of support, which is incredible.
And we'll talk scrutiny and pressure with a head coach of Sky Bet League One's fallen giant.
The scrutiny and the pressure that comes with taking over a team like Sunderland is something that I was really eager to do.
It's the official EFL podcast. The Sunderland head coach, Alex Neil, to come, but let's start in the Sky Bet Championship, where there's lots of talk over the past couple of weeks about Luton Town possibly finishing the season by writing the greatest football story of the modern era, rise from the National League to a return to the Premier League in the space of just 8 seasons. Harry Cornick has so far weighed in with 10 of the league goals that see them sitting at the heart of the playoff places, and now in his 5th season with the club has played a huge part in their rise. Are we allowed to talk about this and the possibility of promotion? Because at some clubs, Harry, they knock it all down and go, oh no, don't mention it, just talk about the next game. But I get the impression at Luton, it's like, well, let's just go for it.
Yeah, we speak about it every day. I think it's what we talk about every day. It's what we think about every time we leave the training ground. It's what we dream of, really. So why wouldn't we talk about it? Why wouldn't we talk about it, about who we're playing, who's in amongst us, checking the results? It's huge for us. It's huge for everyone.
Are you pinching yourself? You look at the top of the championship table. Are you, after everything this club has gone through, not going, wow?
It's a bit of a shock to see us up there, but I think we're good enough. I think if you look at the squad we've got, the way we're playing, when we play against other teams, we don't feel like we're inferior to the big clubs around us. We feel like we deserve to be right in amongst it. So why not?
Do you thrive on the car? I call you upstarts to your manager, Nathan Jones. Face, you know, I was fortunate enough to host a Christmas dinner with some of the boys. I know I'm doing your end of season player of the year award, so I feel I can get away with this. Do you thrive on that tag? Do you thrive on people telling you the ground's not good enough? How is this squad up there and all those different factors?
100%. I think we've got to play to our strengths. I think people come to Kenilworth Road. I think if we do make the playoffs, which we might not, that our home leg at Kenilworth Road is going to be massive for us, because no one wants to come to Kenilworth Road. No one wants to play against us there. It's like our little fortress that we thrive on. We know we play well there. The fans love it there, and we just use it to our advantage. But I think we belong where we are. I think we're a big club. We're a massive club. I think last night we took 3,000 something fans to Peterborough away. So I think we're a massive club, which we deserve to be where we are.
I think most of us who follow football have been to the Kenny as a spectator. But what's it like to be in the centre of the pitch when a game is going your way and feel that atmosphere from on the grass?
Yes, yeah, it's brilliant. I mean, they celebrate a goal. They celebrate a corner like it's a goal. It's crazy. They love it. They love football. It's such a good club. It's such a family club as well, because when you leave the ground afterwards, you speak to the fans. It's not like a massive club where no fans can get near you. There's all this security. The fans are so close to you that you can hear everything they say.
I guess that strengthens those bonds as well, doesn't it? Occasionally you might hear something you don't want to, but generally speaking, if you're walking to the car park through supporters taking the same route out as them, it's going to create that culture, which is one of those extra ingredients of the club.
Yeah, I think it's massive for the club, that the connection we have with the fans, but it's not just us hearing, the home fans hearing what the home players hearing what they're saying. I think the away fans, the away players hear the fans saying everything they want. They're so close to them. I remember seeing away players taking throw-ins along the Kenilworth Road end, and they hear everything. It's crazy. I hear everything they say, so it must be a bit intimidating, a bit hostile for the away players, but I think that helps us.
When you came in, and this is your 5th season in League Two, And you'd been on all those loan moves and obviously eventually had to leave Bournemouth. How did you think your career was going to play out?
Yes, it's a good question. But when I met with Nathan Jones for the first time, he does a little presentation. He does it for every player he signs, and it's a good presentation, to be fair. He sets out what he thinks of you and what he wants to achieve as a club and then what he wants to achieve as a player. And when I met him, I was 20, 21, a winger from Bournemouth, not really learned much about the game. And he said to me, you'll be a championship player and you'll be a striker, you won't be a winger. And I thought at the time, I left the meeting, I thought, oh, it might happen, might not. And everything he said has come true. So you've got to believe in the man. He's made it all happen. So I've got a lot to thank for him. But yeah, but when I left, I didn't really think I'd be a championship player, established, scoring 10 goals this season. I didn't think I'd be to that level, but I've worked hard and I'm here now, so making the most of it.
I just want to be clear, Harry, that is a sort of custom presentation specifically for you. This is not something he's got on the shelf waiting to do to every player. He's drilled right down into your nuances, all the nooks and crannies of your life, career, yeah. And he specifically presents for you, because that must make you feel really special.
It does. The amount of work that him, not just him, but like Mick Harford, the scouting network that they put in, the recruitment team at Luton is fantastic to pick up players like Fred, Elijah coming in, Cal Naismith, Alan Campbell. These players have been magnificent for us this season and really pushed us on, kicked us on to the next level. So, yeah, he does this meeting and you come out of it thinking, wow, he knows everything about me. He knows where I was in non-league, who I was playing for. He's got clips from my non-league days. I'm thinking, how's he got hold of this? But his attention to detail is crazy. It's when I left Bournemouth, it was Eddie Howe. His management style was, I thought, oh, he's so good. I had him right up there. I thought of it. His attention to the detail and the meetings about the opposition. But then Nathan Jones is so similar to him that I think it just sort of helped me that they were so similar managers that it helped me a lot.
And yet their personalities seem very different.
I
was going to say those explosions of emotion. They're quite enthralling from a spectator's point of view. What are they like to witness from inside?
He's very emotional. Let's put it that way. I mean, you'd much rather come off the pitch knowing you've won than you've lost, because you know when you get into that changing room, you're going to get the happiest, craziest Nathan Jones, or an angry Nathan Jones who's going to shout a lot. But it's because it means so much to him, and you can see that. And I think us as players know how much it means to him. And we sort of play thinking, we want to make our manager proud, we want to make our fans proud, and we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can for him, because the amount he does for us on the pitch is crazy. Him, Chris Cohen, Alan Sheehan, all the coaches, the amount of work they put in, that you really want to make sure that you're doing everything you can for them on the pitch.
Does a player have to get him to sign for the club? Because I do a little bit of work with coaches and managers on communication styles, and a lot of them are saying with younger generations, you can't get away with bawling, screaming, being over emotional. So do you have to be a certain type of person to cope with signing for Luton Town?
I think when you sign, I think a few of the lads pull you and say, this is what the manager's like, this is what he expects, this is what everyone at the club expects from you. Some players don't deal with it well, but I think when they recruit, they make sure they pick the right players that are going to respond well to how he manages players. But everything he says is with a pinch of salt. If he's shouting at you, he's having a go at you, you know it's all for the right reasons. It's because he wants and he demands the most and he wants the best. So you know it's for the right reasons.
And the other thing I kind of love about him is, obviously, there's some quite big name players have been coming in of late compared to a few years ago. You know, Henry Lansbury, Robert Snodgrass, Cameron Jerome, that he seems to be able to assimilate them in his mix as well. Yeah. They get him too.
Every player is different. Every player, some players need an arm around their shoulder. Some of them need a telling off. And I think having the senior players around, like Snods and H and Cam, they're so good to go and talk to, whereas you can't always go to the manager. He's not always got the time to. You can always go to the senior players and talk to them. And I think they're going to be massive for us in the last six games now, because they've been there and done it. Cameron Jerome's been promoted. I think Lansbury's been promoted. Snodgrass has been in the Premier League for so many years that their experience is going to be so, so important to us going into the run and keeping us all calm, composed, knowing every game at a time. They're going to be so important for us.
I don't want to break any links for you back home, but you would have witnessed Bournemouth's rise from League Two to the Premier League, sort of being in and around the squad. This would surpass it, would it not? This would usurp it, Luton, if it happened.
Yeah, I think so. I think the resources we have compared to Bournemouth when they're in the Championship they're not comparable, really. But the it's not the quality of players, but the amount of money the players are on and the depth and the sort of that sort of thing is a big difference. But it is similar in the way that we've gone from League Two, League One. We got the points deduction at the exact same time, so it'd be a massive achievement for us. It'd be very similar to what Bournemouth did, but I feel like now being part of Luton, a bit more involved playing the games, it would be so much more valuable. Sort of.
Yeah. How do you feel at this point in the season where, you know, fingers crossed from your point of view, you've got another 9 games to play. I'm including the 3 playoff games in there as well. Are you physically, mentally knackered? Do you feel as fresh as a daisy because you've been of what you've been experiencing?
I think it's just the excitement, really, for everyone getting them through. I think everyone, come the end of the season, every player's knackered, every player's played so many minutes that their bodies are obviously wilting a little bit. But the excitement for the lads, it's so exciting going into every game knowing how close we are to doing something so special. And no one thinks we should be here. And I think that's what's given everyone the thing, thinking, no one thinks we should be here, no one thinks we're going to do it. Like, we can prove everyone wrong here.
I always remember at the end of a season looking at, it was Nyren Nosworthy, used to play for Gillingham for Sunderland's legs at the end of a season. And you could have joined the dots up. He had so many marks on his skin. Are your legs like that as well? Sort of minor bruises, scratches, yeah. Cuts, sort of little dots of scar tissue, etc.?
Yeah, a few cuts and bruises, but it's all worth it. I think now comes the end of the season, everyone's put all their training in. It's so many recovery days. It's so many times just making sure your legs are fresh for the next game, because they come so thick and fast now. Come Easter period, it's Saturday, Tuesday, the whole way through. So it's just, we've put the training hours in, we've done all the work. It's just getting through to the end of the season now, picking up as many points as we can.
Harry, I've absolutely loved the chat. Are you going to congratulate me? I got through the whole thing without using the old Harry Connick Jr. bit.
I thought you was going to, but you thought
I was going to get through. Do you get it a lot? Seriously, do people constantly weaving the two names together?
I get it quite a bit. I got it a bit more when I was younger, but no, I still get it all the time. When I first ever got it, I was so confused. I had no idea who he was, but now, all the time. Great singer. Yeah. Shame I'm not as good at singing.
Yeah, that was my next question. Actually, do you actually, as a result, have you listened to his music? Do you actually enjoy his music?
I don't really listen to it. I've heard a few snippets on the old YouTube, but he's talented. He's a much better singer than me. So when I do my initiations, a few people come up to me and say, "Oh, you must be half decent." Like, and I think how does it even compare? But no, terrible voice me, but brilliant voice him.
Yeah, but on the other hand, who's the better footballer? Who could be playing in the Premier League next season, eh?
I think exactly right.
I'm calling that even, Stevens. Harry, what a joy. Enjoy the rest of your season.
Thank you very much. Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Elsewhere in the Sky Bet Championship, Swansea City secured the first ever league double in the South Wales Derby, thrashing Cardiff City on their own turf. Your fixtures this coming weekend, early kickoff on Saturday, see Sheffield United take on Bournemouth, Blackburn entertain Blackpool, Middlesbrough at home to Hull, Forest at home to Birmingham, QPR have lost 6 their last 7 visit Preston, Reading, who are now 8 points clear of the relegation zone, entertain Cardiff. Then on Sunday, the leaders Fulham are at home to Coventry City. And on Monday evening, it is Huddersfield against Luton as 2 of the playoff contenders go head-to-head. And Harry Connick will presumably be in action.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
All of this week, the EFL is celebrating its week of action. It's organised by the EFL Trust, whose CEO is Mike Evans. And I guess, first of all, Mike, we spoke to you last year ahead of what was a day of action. Shall we just remind people what it's all about and also why you have moved from a day of activities through to 7 of them?
Thanks, Clem. So the EFL Week of Action is an opportunity for us to shine a light on the brilliant work that EFL clubs are doing in their community every day and every week of the year. Traditionally, we focused on one day in the calendar, but we've just found that there's so much stuff going on with clubs that it just gives us a larger window to explore that and get some sort of media coverage of that. And then also, of course, you know, clubs are running some sessions on a Monday and some on a Thursday and some on a Friday afternoon. So by doing a full week, it enables us to, you know, to go into different sessions that, as I say, are running all the time without having to put a special event on a specific day. So, yeah, it just gives us that chance really to really give it the justice it deserves, I think, in terms of media coverage.
I mean, that's wonderfully said, because it does seem to me to be in many cases completely selfless. There is so much going on, Mike, at our 72 EFL Football League clubs that most of us are completely oblivious to. And yet often it's, well, almost literally in a proportion of cases, life-saving, life-changing, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the last time we spoke, we were obviously in the deep throes of the pandemic. And, you know, the work that clubs did to support their communities during that period, I think will be remembered for a very long time by the people who received services from them, the local authorities that they supported, the other charities that they helped in terms of distributing food and supporting lonely and isolated people. So I think, you know, this great work's been happening in communities by football clubs for years and years, but I think it's just kind of kicked on now to a totally different level. I think the role of clubs as anchor organisations in their community to be able to support people and bring them together through difficult times has really been recognised now. So what we're seeing this year is different again. It's great that facilities are open again. You know, a lot of activities with young people just kicking a football around have been really, really difficult to deliver over the last 18 months. And, you know, so great to see that core work coming back, you know, particularly at places like Swindon Town, who have got a brand new facility down there that they've had to mothball during the pandemic. So we'll see that up and running again. But then those services, we talked a lot about Port Vale last year with their services for older people, and they've continued that as the older, more core activities has started up again. So now they're just doing more now. They're helping more people. They're having a bigger impact in the community. So it's brilliant.
Yeah. Although, of course, what has had a big impact in the community is the pandemic. It's not just the kind of, if you like, emergency ward situation that it was at the heart of it last year, Mike, but there's going to be a lot of residual stick. We're hearing it in the health service. We're hearing it in terms of mental health, which brings a whole new set of problems, challenges for the Football League clubs as they strive to help their people.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, again, around sort of physical fitness, you know, we've seen levels of physical activity decline, you know, in pretty much all settings, in all age groups, disadvantaged areas being more affected than more affluent areas. In that, so, you know, programs such as our Fit Fans program, where we work with men predominantly, but also women aged over 35 with weight problems. We've seen those programs now being delivered by nearly 50 clubs, completely oversubscribed, because people are coming out of the house again and starting to recognise their own lack of fitness and wanting to do something about it. So the provision is there, and clubs such as Luton Town are going to be they're going to be showcasing that during the week of action. So that is definitely a real legacy issue. Mental health as well. Clearly, people's confidence has been knocked by the pandemic. So coming out and providing mental health services for particularly young people in schools to help them with confidence to reintegrate back into school life. We're seeing a lot of that sort of work. Again, a real range of stuff. And as you say, some of those issues this year are different to what they might have been two or three years ago.
And yet your clubs are attacking these issues, these challenges, these problems with arguably their own resources under even more strain, because clearly their coffers have been affected by the pandemic themselves, which again just underlines the work that those clubs are doing.
Yeah, it's quite nuanced, Clem, the funding situation around this work and something that's probably a subject for its own podcast. As you say, clubs have been remarkably resilient to keep going through the pandemic with no income through the turnstiles. And we've seen fans rally around and donate season ticket money for a whole season where they didn't get to games to allow the clubs to continue operating. We've seen owners digging deep into the pockets to, you know, to keep clubs afloat. And then we've also seen some incredible gestures, you know, like Burton Albion making their stadium available to the NHS absolutely free of charge to work as a vaccination centre. And, you know, the owner there, who I know you'll know well, Ben Robinson, you know, has made that gesture to support his local community, which is incredible. But then most of the work of the actual club community organisations is funded work where they're, you know, they're quite often being paid by the local authority to deliver what are often statutory services around mental health, the holiday activity and food programme where children on free school meals are fed during the holidays is now a big part of probably most clubs' work. I'll mention Blackpool and Nottingham Forest as being two of the biggest in that area, Port Vale again, but it's something that probably 60 plus clubs are involved in the summer holidays. So there is a business model. They're all operating as charities, but there's a business model too that's really important as well.
Yeah, I mean, that particular subject, the HAF programmes alone are a huge issue. I mean, we've all seen the news items on, many of us, I'm sure, about the sort of oversubscription of food banks, energy prices going up. There's a heck of a lot of strain on households just to do the basics of putting essential foods in children's mouths, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. So anything that we can do to support those families, you know, something like 70% of the most deprived wards in the country are within 10 miles of an EFL club. So the catchment areas in which these club community charities work is very close to where a lot of those real social issues are. So, you know, they're inventive and they're innovative and, you know, they're there to support those communities in whichever way they can. And the HAF programme is, again, a strand of work. That whole funding stream is relatively new, only over the last couple of the years that the government has actually stepped in to help address that problem. But they need reliable delivery agencies to do that for them. And that's what the clubs are. They're professional organisations with all of the governance and safeguarding and things in place to do this great work, which allows them to you know, to do that, which is fantastic.
I mean, listen, you've obviously, this is an issue through dint of your work and probably personal values as well. This is something that's very important to you. It's all right as outlining the problems, but we should say there are many, many case studies of people whose lives have been transformed. Have you got an example for us of a particular situation, a challenge an individual or a group of people faced that have been helped and put on the road to salvation by EFL Club Action? It can be something relevant to the weeks of action, i.e. it's going on right now, or it might be just something that sticks in your own mind through your own involvement over the years.
There's just so many, it's really incredible when you get to talk to people who've been through these programs. I mean, one of the other programs that we've been really strong on over the last year or so has been the Kickstart program, helping young people with their first step into employment. We've actually placed 630 young people across the network into a real range of roles across football clubs, from ground staff to community coaches, administrators, marketing, media. And I actually had the pleasure of going down to Accrington Stanley for the day and speaking to two or three of their young people. And one of the girls there who'd always wanted to work in football coaching, but just wasn't sure that she had the confidence for the role, probably wouldn't have got through an interview if the charity at Accrington Stanley was going to have to, you know, pay the wages themselves and really take that chance. But because there was some funding available to support them through six months of training, it worked for her to have that 6 month role. It worked for the charity to be able to sort of see her and work with her and develop her confidence. And it led to a full time role. And, you know, programs like that, again, 630 people, you know, if half of them get full time roles through that program, that's an incredible success rate. And we're seeing them going to full time roles. We're seeing them get one a teaching assistant at Rotherham United who'd always wanted to go into full-time teaching, just needed that 6 months experience, and they're now working full-time in a school in Rotherham as a full-time teaching assistant, what they had always wanted to do. And so, we've helped that person on that journey, which is fantastic. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, I think it's probably one of the key things to outline, isn't it? That just because it feels something that we as individuals can deal with doesn't mean it's as easy to do from somebody else's perspective. We've all got things that we're good at, bad at, things that we like, dislike, things that we're passionate about and are within our comfort zone. For somebody else might be something that causes the deepest fears. And it's really important to just underline that the things we take for granted don't necessarily fall into place for others.
No, I agree entirely, Clem. I think the sort of helping hands that we can give people on their journeys through life, and it can be at any age, you know, we just focus then on young people, you know, looking for full-time employment for the first time. I mean, you know, can you remember that stage in life, that moving from dotting about in control of your own time, doing what you wanted, to suddenly I've got some responsibility here and I need to earn some money, whether it's to move out of home or to support your family, maybe. You know, that these are big sort of transition steps in life, and the football clubs are there. They're there for young people moving from primary school to secondary school, from secondary school to college, into work. And then also, as we've focused on a lot over the last 12 months, at the other end of life as well, going maybe from full-time employment into retirement and having a life-changing incident like a spouse or a family member passing away and not having a support network around you and wondering where to go. And football clubs through our Extra Time Hubs programme are providing that sort of support, which is incredible.
Thank you for sharing. If somebody is interested in finding out what's going on in their area around their own particular club, or maybe somebody's listening to this and maybe wants to try and offer a little bit of help, what would you suggest that they do? Where would they go for information or to make an approach?
Well, hopefully, again, through this week of action, we're highlighting the sorts of activities that clubs provide and the sort of services they provide. If you're local to a football club, check out the website, see what they do, and whether it's you yourself requiring a service or a family member, hopefully that information's there for you. If you're looking to get involved as a volunteer or a fundraiser, you'll be welcome with open arms to help support any programme. And yeah, we just want to keep growing the family, really, growing the number of volunteers, growing the funding support that allows us to do more, and then we can help more people in more communities, and that's what it's all about.
Keep up the great work, Mike. Thanks for joining us on the official EFL podcast.
Nice to see you, Clem. Take care.
This is the official EFL podcast.
What a climax the season it promises to be at the top of Sky Bet League One, which, in case it has passed you by, finishes 1 week ahead of the Sky Bet Championship and Sky Bet League Two on the 30th of April. It's all change at the very top after the last round of fixtures. The playoff places are on constant shuffle and many of the promotion contenders still have to play each other. We can talk to the Sunderland head coach, Alex Neil, whose team are one of them. And Alex, I'm guessing you knew what you signed up for. There is absolutely no hiding place whatsoever, is there? It's just constant when you're in the thick of it.
Yeah, but I think that's what attracted me to the role. You know, I took a very similar type job, albeit at a different level, at a different stage in the season at Norwich. You know, and it seemed to bring the best out of me and the best out of the team. So the difficulty I had then is with 25 games remaining, whereas with this one, there's likely to be 15, you know, and then obviously, hopefully, if we manage to get into the top six, into the playoffs, then you've got that to contend with. But I feel at home in that situation. You know, I've done it at Hamilton, I've done it at Norwich, and I think just the challenge, and like you say, the scrutiny and the pressure that comes with taking over a team like Sunderland and the expectancy is something that I was really eager to do.
Yeah, are those two words you've just used, scrutiny and pressure, they were there right at your unveiling sort of press. You mentioned it, that you had no doubt about the players' abilities, but it was how they coped under scrutiny and pressure. Is that almost as important as dealing with the technical side of coaching the team? dealing with those expectations and getting inside the players' heads and telling them that they can be what you aspire them to be and can do it on a big stage?
It certainly is at a club like Sunderland. You know, I don't think there's many other clubs that are nominally like Sunderland in the fact that the club are in League One. You know, it's such a big club with such a big support, such a big stadium, all of that sort of stuff. So the pressures and the scrutiny that you talk about for the players is very different from most clubs. You know, I think I've experienced that since I've been here. I think every club, pretty much, probably apart from MK Dons, to be fair to them, have came and literally sat behind the ball. You know, so there's a huge pressure on our players to try and break that down. And not only that, you know yourself, when you play any game, the internal factors on the pitch in terms of technically playing well, coping with strategies and systems and formations is one thing. But we've got the external pressures as well. Which takes an elite mentality from the players to be able to block out and focus on the job.
Yeah, external pressure, but internal as well, because obviously there'll be a huge clamour, not just from the ownership, but I guess everybody working within the club, both football related and all the other roles, to get back to the Championship as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I think the difference with those roles, but is we can control them to a point, you know, because we can have constant dialogue. We can explain the situation. So they're much more privy to the ingoings, the internal ingoings of the club. So we understand the predicament we're in. We understand where players are and their fitness levels. Whereas, unfortunately, you can't divulge every moving part of a club externally because that's just not how it works. You know, we need to make sure we control the controllable. So internally, we can control how much pressure we apply to the pressures and how much we're trying to alleviate that pressure to allow them to perform.
So to that end then, is one of your jobs as head coach to appear as serene and calm on the surface as possible? So when you are looking for that elusive winner and it doesn't come until the fifth minute of injury time, like it did against Gillingham at the weekend, you know all it takes is one chance and the job's done.
Yeah, of course. And that was something we discussed as a group, as a team throughout that week. You know, I'd watched a lot of Gillingham. They've been really, really hard to beat under Neil Harris. So we knew it was going to be a really tough, difficult task. So, yeah, I think that depending on what the group and the team need that week is how I'll sort of conduct myself, really. So that game in particular needed patience. But there will be other games where we need to be get up and get at them and it's going to be a two-way game and a bit of sort of needle and a bit of edge may well come for the side and the fact that that's required for the game.
I mean, you obviously knew what a huge club it was. Is it any different when you're on the inside of it as opposed to viewing it from the outside, Alex?
Yeah, I think every club's the same. You know, I think when you walk in, there's dynamics that you didn't account for. There's dynamics that are there that you weren't aware of. Do you know what I mean? Because they're in the background. And then it's just how you go in and cope and deal and manage and try and get those dynamics, if you like, in your favour. So, yeah, that's no different for any club, though, because the best way I describe it is that you like, get a new car, and then once you open the bonnet up and you look underneath, you get a true reflection of what it looks like, you know. Yeah. But externally, looking at it from the outside, everybody looks at Sunderland and think, why is this club still in League One? Why is it not getting out League One? What do I mean? But when you get in the building, obviously, and you look at things from an internal point of view, there's certain aspects that we need to try and improve, naturally.
Yeah. Do you know why the club is still at that level? Have you worked it out?
Yeah, well, I think for one thing, there hasn't been any stability at the club for a long period in time. You know, and if you look at any team that's successful, generally, there's a consistent theme throughout the sort of club in terms of personnel, in terms of even background staff. What stood out to me with Sunderland is in the last 6 to 12 months, the amount of staff that have came and left the building in that period of time is probably more than any other club I've ever seen. Do you know what I mean? And a lot of that doesn't get spoken about because it's not in front of you. It's not in the limelight, if you like. It's sort of behind the scenes. So that in itself is something that we need to make sure becomes a lot more stable. Do you know what I mean? We've got a plan. We need to stick to the plan. And the plan isn't going to go from 0 to 100%, just be a steady incline. There's going to be bumps along the way, and that's where you need to hold your nerve. You need to believe in what you're trying to do, and see it through, you know. And ultimately, I don't think we've seen anything through for a long while.
Do you think that's just a sort of replication of society and the modern world, though, that change seems to be all around us all the time at the moment? Organisations that were once stable seem to be changing in the space of a year. It's a completely different complexion.
Definitely. But I think if you look at over the course of history, Clem, if you take certain institutions that do change, but change for the better and continually go on an upward curve, then there's justification as to why they've done it. That's not been the case here. You know, and I think that's the important part, is the fact that when you make change, you want it to be a positive change. And at some point, the best thing to do is do nothing and let it ride its course. You know, and I think that certainly for football clubs, I think football clubs are different than most organisations, because any other job that you work at normally, like if you're, I don't know, if you're working in an accountancy firm for a big firm, once you type the numbers in, the numbers are the numbers. You don't have somebody pulling your finger away from the keyboard. You know, but the simple fact is, when we're trying to do our jobs, we've got an opponent that's trying to stop us from being successful and try to take that glory from us and put it onto themselves. So it's a performance-based sport, which means there's not a way to do it that brings success. There's 100 different ways to do it to bring success.
You always appear so calm on the surface, Alex. Chatting to you now, you appear so serene. I mean, this is sort of a day off for you because the family are with you, with it being into the Easter holidays. What's going on in your head? Is it constantly there with you every waking second, this process of trying to achieve the objective of getting Sunderland up?
Yeah, but I think like you say, I think the process brings me calmness because I know what needs done. Do I mean my week's set out in terms of what the boxes I need to tick to make sure we're prepped for the game? In the background, you've got obviously the dealing with the players and then obviously you've got contract situations that are going to arise in the summer. You've got recruitment situations. You've got backroom staffing situations that we need to resolve. But I think, certainly, and I've said this quite a few times since I've been here, because this is such a big juggernaut of a club, I think whoever takes it on, really, for me, probably needs to have a good element of experience, because there's so many moving parts. And I think the fact that I've done this job for such a period of time now puts me in a really good situation where I understand every aspect of the club and what needs done, really. So, and there's been a lot of good work went on in the last 12 months here. But because it started from such a sort of bare background, the fruition of that won't probably be seen for the next 12 months and maybe even beyond.
That experience obviously must include experience of the playoffs with Hamilton 2014, experience of promotion through the playoffs with Norwich in 2015 as well. Rather begs the question about sort of comparisons. Are there characteristics that need to be in the building to achieve promotion through the playoffs?
Definitely. You know, I think the way that I've certainly done it before with the teams that I've had, there's certain characteristics and commonality that, if I look across those teams, they've got a lot of things in common, you know, and I do see a lot of those characteristics in this team. You know, I think that, I said this before, because it's such a limited period of games for us, my biggest concern was running out of games to maybe not get in the playoffs. I believe if we get in the playoffs, we'll be as good a match for anybody. I don't think there'll be many teams looking at us thinking, yeah, I hope we get them. I very much doubt that would be the case. I just hope in these next remaining six games, we do enough to make sure that we secure that spot, because if we do, I'd really fancy our chances.
Those characteristics, are you willing to share a few of them with us that are needed to be within the mix?
Yeah, well, I think it's got to be a good balance in your group between experience and youth, which I think that we probably haven't had over the course of the season. And I think maybe some of the downturns is the fact that some of the experienced players haven't been available. I think now Saturday's team was certainly more experienced than what we've been fielding for the last parts of the season, so I think that will certainly help. I think that we made a lot of signings in January that, unfortunately for them, when they joined, hadn't had a lot of game time, so we've had to get them up to speed. We've had a lot of young players that have overplayed, which meant they were sort of dipping, but because they'd played far too much football, we've managed to resolve that. And I think that what we do have, which is really important, is strength and depth. You know, I think we've got players now that are coming off the bench regularly. I think that's three games now that we've brought guys off the bench that have changed the game in our favour through scoring the winning goal or being a part of the winning goal. And certainly for this running, those type of characteristics are absolutely key.
I mentioned when I introduced you so many teams playing each other, and that's certainly the case for you as well, because just going through the fixtures here, obviously you've got Oxford coming up this weekend. You've still got to travel to Plymouth, haven't you? I've got so many pieces of paper here, Alex. I'm having to double check. You've still got Plymouth to play. You've still got Rotherham to play. And that's replicated across all the teams that are currently in the mix. So many massive games, opportunities to pick up those extra points to make up ground, but obviously watching the blind side as well, that nobody nips in behind you.
Yeah, but I think that probably suits us, you know, because I think those 50-50 games where teams are going to come and try and beat us, we're naturally going to go and try and beat them. And I think it will be a case of the best man on the day will win. So they're the games that we look forward to. You know, obviously we've got other games in there, which will probably be a case of us trying to break the opponent down. And how much quality can we have? How stubborn will they be? How much patience have we got to see that through and hopefully get an early goal and change the dynamic of the game? So there's a lot of different challenges in this league. I think the one thing this league finds up, probably more so than any other league I've been involved in, and I think COVID's the part to do with it in recent years for every division, but certainly more in this division. There's more games in hand in this division with people playing in different nights, so you know what you need to do or you don't know what you need to do. I mean, I've never known a division where those teams get 4 and 5 games in hand. I mean, that was really, really bizarre. Normally, particularly the Championship, the league I've been involved in most, normally they try and keep it. So on a Saturday, everybody's playing at the same time, so you need to go and try and win your game, not knowing what the next result is. League One, certainly this season, has been very different for that. I think Wigan, for the majority of the season, have had games in hand on most teams. Now it's actually flipped, and Rotherham have now got a couple of games in hand in certain teams.
Yeah. Do you know what? You're absolutely right. If I was to read the games played of the top eight, who I guess are the main contenders, you know, it'd be 39, 41, 39, 41, 40, 41, 40, 41. You're right. There's a complete and total inconsistency there. You know, imagine trying to cover it from my side of the fence. Yeah. You've got to have eyes in the back of your head, mate, to keep up, which I guess you do as well.
What happens off the back of that, Clem, particularly for supporters, is they get a false sense of where you actually are. Because sometimes you may have played 2 more games but be 2 points ahead of somebody and everybody thinks, oh, we're in the top 6. But in actual fact, they've got 2 games in hand, or vice versa. You could find yourself maybe 7th or 8th, but you've got 2 games in the hand and an opponent's maybe 1 point ahead of you. So it just gives a little bit of a false picture at that point, which means the emotions are going from one extreme to another extreme, dependent on the games. And that's the bit that we want to try and control for ourselves, because we want to be relatively steady. We want to understand what the job is, what we need to do, and go and approach it as such, really.
And it takes us back to the calmness of yourself that I mentioned, that the job is not done and dusted until about 2:15 on Saturday, the 30th of April.
Definitely. You know, and that's the thing. We know there's a lot of points to play for. There's a lot of twists and turns coming our way. There's going to be moments where we've probably done it. There's going to be moments where we're looking, probably think we're out yet. Do I mean? And it's funny because I was speaking to a supporters group yesterday, and what I said to them was, while it's going on, stay with us, because yous can affect our group probably as much as any fan base can affect our group in the country. So until it's done, stay with us. Once it's done and we see where the lay of the land is, then you can have as much opinion as you like in terms of whether we've done it or whether we haven't done it or whatever the case may be. But while it's going on, as we've seen on Saturday, until the whistle goes, there's always an opportunity and a chance for you to be successful and get there.
Yeah. Could that be a huge result, not just in terms of those 2 extra points garnered last weekend, but in terms of a little bit of a lesson to everybody, the players on the pitch, keep going until the final whistle, a message to the supporters there as well. You know, all we got to do is score 1 goal more than the opposition to pick up the points. I mean, it could be massive, couldn't it? What happened to you in that game?
Definitely, you know, and to be honest, it's no more than we deserved in that match, but equally, we were excellent at Lincoln and really should have won the game quite comfortably. We were excellent at Charlton and should have won that game quite comfortably. So, in my view, it was no more than we deserved over that period, because our performances in the main have been pretty good, particularly away from home. We played really well. Probably a couple of games that we didn't play so well and we actually scored 5 goals. You know, I thought Fleetwood and Crewe, to be fair to both teams, made it really difficult for us, but we scored 5 goals over 2 games. Whereas some of the better performances, we maybe haven't been sort of scoring the opportunities that have came our way. So Yeah, I think the 2 points could be crucial, but equally there's six games remaining and there's going to be a lot of twists and turns between now and the end.
Of all the things that a manager has to deal with, and this is kind of ridiculous because obviously what happened one, two, three decades ago should have no bearing on the current day, but do you also have to manage sort of playoff hoodoos and all that because you'll be aware of Sunderland's past experiences of the playoffs? Do you have to start getting inside heads and planning how you're going to deal with that when the moment comes that the past doesn't govern the future?
No, I think to be honest, externally, you can't control that. That's impossible, you know, because I think you'll naturally have fans who are pessimists. You'll naturally have fans who are optimists. You ain't going to change that. I mean, what they will do is they'll take confidence for the performance from the team. They'll take confidence from, I don't know, maybe watching an interview with one of the players or myself or whatever in terms of how confident we look. But providing we get the players' minds in a good way, bear in mind, we've got a lot of players who haven't been here until this season. I mean, we've got a vast majority of players that actually this is their first year, particularly for the younger lads. So I think past sort of failures or past sort of hoodoos, as you say, won't have any bearing on that. I mean, I know what it looks like and where I need to get the team for those type of games. And as I say, the type of games have been very kind to me over the years.
Alex, you appear to be loving this role. There'll be some people looking at a person who's willing to take on a job like Sunderland thinking, why would you put yourself through this? But you do appear to be just absolutely thriving on it.
Yeah, it's a challenge for me. You know, I've been very fortunate in the last few years that I've been at a club like Preston, I've been at a club like Norwich, I've sampled the Premier League. I mean, I've been in Championship for a long period of time. So for me now, it's more about try to find the best challenge for myself and how I want to test myself next. You know, that's the only thing that I really consider when I look at my next job. You know, and that was the biggest draw that brought me here. I mean, it certainly wasn't the level that we're operating at. I'd never worked at League One level. It certainly wasn't the money, because when you're in League One, the money's nowhere near what you would get in the Championship. It's more about the challenge. It's more about taking a big juggernaut that quite a few people have had a bash at and try to get out of the league. And let's see if I can try and do it, because like any other coach or manager, you believe that you can be the guy to get the job done.
I wish I could wish you a stress-free end to the season, but I suspect that I can't. Great to talk to you. I've loved that.
Cheers, Clem. Thanks, mate.
Elsewhere in Sky Bet League One, must just give a mention to the Plymouth Argyle goalkeeper, Michael Cooper, who has now kept clean sheets in 6 of his last 8 league games and, in fact, conceded just 5 in 13 matches since the start of February. Plymouth visit Burton this coming weekend. Elsewhere, well, this game doesn't need much setting up, does it? Relegation threatened Wimbledon against MK Dons, who are currently in second. Sheffield Wednesday head to Bolton. Wickham are at Gillingham. The leaders, Wigan, are at Lincoln City. Oxford United it is who entertain Alex Neil Sunderland this coming weekend. And Rotherham, the deposed leaders, temporarily at least. They've got a couple of games in hand on second-placed MK Dons. They are at home to Charlton. Into Sky Bet League 2. And commiseration to Forest Green Rovers' Matty Stevens. His 27 goals for the season, 23 in the league, will not be added to. He faces a long layoff after damaging an ACL. In the leaders, we're at bottom club Scunthorpe United last weekend. This weekend, your fixtures include second place Exeter City's trip to Carlisle United, Stevenage in that second relegation place. They head to Colchester. The leaders, Forest Green, at home to Hartlepool United. Northampton in fourth are at home to Bradford City. Port Vale won 6 of an unbeaten last 7 and slowly but surely welcoming Darryl Clark, their manager, back into the fold after his extended bereavement leave. They are at home to Oldham Athletic. It's Scunthorpe against Mansfield, who are 6th. United back from their exertions in the Papa John's Trophy final, currently in 11th, but win their game in hand and they would be in the playoffs. They entertain Leyton Orient. Swindon Town against Newport County is 9th, be 8th, and Tranmere Rovers against Bristol Rovers is 7th, be 5th. That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Alex Neil, to Mike Evans, and to Harry Cornick. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button, and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name is Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.